I want to address the committee. Betty will be here in just a minute. We just got out of the governor's office. Pass this down for her. As it relates to the money for, remember in the committee we've talked about funding fire suppression efforts and that sort of thing. I had a meeting yesterday with a significant number of people to talk about that subject. And on the bottom line, what I came out with was this. They're asking for $5 million. And there's some people from the department here. You can support what I'm saying here. For $5.5 million, when basically an equivalent amount of fire suppression work can be accomplished for about $600,000. And that would buy the equivalent of 4 super PBYs to lay down. Everybody agreed that essentially 4 PBYs, even with allowing a little margin, would lay down as much coverage and protection as would these two units. If you think about that for a minute, you could take the $5.5 million, invest it even at 10%, and provide enough money to continue with fire suppression. So I thought that the thing I would do, if it was agreeable with this committee, is to again address this subject in finance and going that route. If the committee wants to go a different route, we'll introduce a bill and we'll hash it out here and do whatever you want. But right now, it'd be my recommendation that at least for the time being, that we put $600,000 in that in the budget for, and I'll go to the private sector and lease fire suppression equivalent to the 215s, CL215s.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
If we become satisfied that we get the same coverage, I don't see anything wrong with that approach. My question has always been that in the free enterprise system, we don't guarantee excessive profits, excessive deals, while waving the flag free enterprise. It must truly be a competitive, at least equal to what the state taxpayers have to pay for the state participating. If it's that, then I'm in agreement with you.
It was acknowledged,
established to be that.
It was acknowledged by both sides yesterday that at least one side, the PBY people said that one super PBY gives you 120% of a CL215. The other side didn't buy that story, but they at least acknowledged that at least two super PBYs give you as much coverage as a CL215, and you can lease those in today's dollars for the 90-day period of time for $150,000, crew, maintenance, everything laid out each, and that comes up to $600,000. Yes, sir.
Are those light aircraft
Oh, yes. There is a couple in Alaska, and I think there are some joint venture arrangements with people outside available.
Can we get a local man to make the deal outside, or do we have can we go through an Alaska firm to do it, or do we have to go outside and cut
Alaska? We had two firms here yesterday, both interest, at least two firms from the local private sector, Ward Air and some others, people who've attended the hearings here. And they agreed. They were delighted with the decision or the outcome that we made there yesterday. The conclusions that we came to yesterday. They said, "You put it on the market, and we'll bid for it."
Mr. Chairman,
excuse me. I just want to make sure if it all comes, well, even if in finance we agree to this, that we try to write that as strongly as possible. If some Alaska business gets it, you know, and we can hold them responsible, they go get it. I'd sure hate to see one of those deals $600,000 in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I will encourage that and carry that
then
forward.
You have my
okay. One other question on it, and it came up in the DNR that these planes are for sale for maybe 50% of what they'll cost anybody else because of a prior commitment and understanding. The savings this year, I think we ought to do what we can, and I know we can't guarantee it, to explore the fact that there will be a continuing savings, and one day we don't have to go back and buy two planes at $5 or $6 million each, when we can get two now for $5 or $6 million or two and a half each. They tell me that the cost of that product has gone up so much that, as a matter of fact, it would probably be an awful good buy. Based on that testimony, just buy and resell them, pay for several years.
There seems to be some lack of credibility as to whether or not I'd invest my money at $5 million expecting to get six in that project. But the thing that we did discuss is that at least projected for the next 10 years, that the PBYs and the spares and all of that would be available. The one thing that was also mentioned is that, yes, spares are available for the CL-215, but one wing and a flap cost $1 million-something. What was it, $1.3 million? And I tell you, they're it just seemed to me the preponderance of information yesterday just absolutely dictated that we would not be prudent to go any other way other than buying fire suppressant or fire retardant value for the buck. And
you know that PBY was expensive to maintain the airplane. I'm surprised at that figure. The old DC-6 with its hauling capacity of maybe 90 passengers or more was over 100, I believe. It was as easily and cheaply maintained, they tell me, as PBY.
The PBY has that cheap thing, though, I think.
I know it does, but I just wondered how they could do it for $150,000 for 9 days.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Sure.
A few words.
Sure. Come up. Give your name, and we'll.
Okay. My name is Tom Bergstrom. I'm Director of Administration of Department of Natural Resources. I met with both of the operators who had PBYs available for the upcoming season yesterday, and in working out some of the costs, they did come out slightly higher than the $150,000 figure. We're looking at approximately, that was without fuel, which we would be responsible for. Based on a 100-day contract rather than a 90-day with an extension clause, 100-day was suggested because of these latitudes. That's generally the duration of the contract in Canada. It looks as though we're facing a fire season as well, so approximately the same length. So on a 100-day contract with an extension clause, the cost and either slightly high, and actually they weren't going to give their bid figures at the moment. Looking for ballpark figures, we're looking at something like $1,200 a day standby cost, $500 a day, or $500 per hour operating costs, state supplies and fuel, based on 125 operating hours, burning 150 gallons an hour, gasoline at $1.50 a gallon. We're looking at approximately $212,000 per aircraft based on three
inclusive
different
fuel.
PBYs. That's inclusive of fuel. Mm-hmm. We've prepared the budget document you have before you, projecting the first year cost of $661,000. What we would like to do, and this is fairly standard practice in most states and is standard practice in Canada, is to have more than a one-year contract. We think we'll get a better operator, a cheaper price, and not have to be scrambling for aircraft year after year. What we'd like to do is to have an appropriation, something like the existing fire suppression fund, which would be a continuing account contained within the Department of Natural Resources exclusively for water scoop operations. And we would be looking at a contract that would be something like a guaranteed fixed cost first year, that would be this summer and next summer, with a window period for the third year. If the state and the contractor couldn't come to agreement, we'd let it out for bid again.
Okay. From my standpoint, that's agreeable to negotiate that way. Finance is the place to do that. They're the ones going to pass on the bucks anyway. And I don't mind looking at it in that light. I would urge you, when you go out to bid, is if you want to see these figures shape up really well, make sure that there are several bidders involved. And that wouldn't surprise me at all that the figures we see here are significantly higher than the bids would be if they know there's some competition.
I would concur with that. My intent would be to let the bid based not on the super PBY, but to establish a minimum capacity, which would be slightly below that of the standard PBY, mm-hmm. and award the contract on the basis of quality of equipment.
Okay.
But open it up for bidding to standard PBY operators as well as super PBY operators.
And notify all Alaska operators. Okay.
Right.
Yes.
We talked about the other day, I know most of you said other departments using aircraft, and I know there's a conflict sometime in the time the fires are going on that the wildlife protection needs them out on the water and other, but it's sometimes you see one agency going in and getting a bunch of PPYs to go do one job for 90 days. And somewhere down the line, we may not be able to do it this year. I would like to see some kind of a department inventory thing. We need these airplanes year-round on all these bases.
Maybe a good point. You could check with other departments and see if they have any off-fire season use for them or need for them. Because I can tell you, you're paying for them year-round anyway, except
that's
for the
right.
pilot. So it might be that we can get some awfully reasonable benefit for these units for the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Would you?
Certainly for patrol duty, since that's what the PBY was designed for originally anyway.
Would you check with the other departments? And?
Yes, I will.
Okay.
I suppose fish and game.
And notify finance staff up there as well as to what you're doing and see if they want to participate.
Yes, I will.
Or the chairman of finance. Any other questions or comments?
So far, it seems like a reasonable
growth. Yeah, but it seems to me like $600,000 or $650,000. You can make that much off of your bucks, and you got it all laid down without the inventory cost and building hangars to keep the airplanes and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Sure.
And if that's we'll know it that way, then that'll save some time. We can, as soon as finance will take it up.
I would urge that we take action. That action be taken as quickly as possible.
I would urge the chairman to do that. We've sent the bill out of here already.
Yeah.
To finance, so it's sitting there.
I'm afraid the planes may be gone if we're too late.
I'll talk to the chairman today.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll hear House Bill 199. And is there someone here to testify on that? Come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Representative Jack Fuller. I'm chairman of the Special Committee on Subsistence. I hate to start pitching this bill. I found out as a freshman if you've got about 8-9 pages, you've got a lot better chance to get it through than if it's very simple in one sentence. But this bill is very simple. What it proposes is that we give status to the subsistence section, the status of a department or division. And as you probably have already read your eight commentaries on this, that commercial fishing, sport fishing, game fishing, rehabilitation have a division status. I think that we're all aware that the subsistence people are also.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think any of us have a copy of the bill as far as doing.
House Bill 199, I think you have. I'm sorry.
I don't have a copy in my file either.
I don't think
Well, we'll fix that up right away.
I can't find it.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Is this it?
Is my beach too short?
199.
I didn't expect it to be that short.
I see what you're doing. Reference, all right. Come around and take the stuff out of the folder like that. Go ahead, continue. We'll get copies here.
I'd like to say that the section has not been active less than a year, but I think it's already developed some real credibility. They handled a couple real tough problems. The Buckland area, as you all probably aware of, had a shortage of beluga. They got about four, and they normally have 80 to 100 every year. The subsistence section made arrangements with the Fish and Game to allow them to take 100 caribou on a special permit. And this worked out real fine, and I think that there's very, very good rapport between the section and the commissioner. I'm only proposing that we give them a division status. There's very little fiscal impact here between the section chief and his deputy. There's a fiscal note of 9,000 $100, and that just brings them up to a range 26 and range 24. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from the committee? Of course, we've got to wait till we get other copies of the bill, but go ahead.
Senator.
Yeah, I have trouble. Normally, Dick, when you set up an organizational structure for a department, there's criteria which calls for a division or a position. You know, it's not a case of just saying that I'd like to be as important as the other guy, so we'll make it, you know, I want the same status as the guy next to me. There's a lot of criteria and good management that goes into the setting up the structure of these divisions. I want you to tell me, in looking at the face of this thing, it looks like something that almost a committee could do or something else. It's not a division. It's not a, it doesn't look like the kind of function that you normally think a division would be doing in just kind of an advisory role.
Do you have a copy of Jens Zierbert's information
right
on this?
Right. And looking
I
down,
think it lays it out
well,
pretty
look,
much.
Look down those, if you would, the first seven. And for the most part, normally those aren't things that, that's what I would have a staff officer doing in my, a subsection giving me advice and coordinating and looking these things up. You normally think of a division, I think, is somebody that actually goes out and performs an executive function, a service of some type or does something.
Senator, I'm not passing the ball, but I think that we've got the section chief here, and I think he can inform you of some of the work that's gone on this present year, and probably can answer this a lot better than I can.
I appreciate that, Dick, and I'm sure didn't mean to put you on the spot, but when we talk about forming a division, I want a better reason for it than just, you know, we'd like to have the same status as Joe. There has to be some organizational reason for doing that, I think.
Well, I think that that's a good reason in itself, sir. I think that, like I say, there's been a good rapport going on, and the section has fitted in very nicely, and we're not having any fistfights or anything. But I still think that that we represent a large segment of a user group, and I feel that this subsistence section is as important as game and fish and other things.
Sure.
And you know it's such a terrible word anyway when you mention subsistence, why everybody gets emotional.
Well, Jack, I think
he's doing a good job. I'd recommend it, but I would like him, Dr. Lonner, to answer some of this for you, because I think you've got a very valid question, and I think he can enlighten you on what you've been doing in that area.
Okay, thanks, Jeff.
Senator Trillin, then Senator Farrington.
I'll skip my questions
okay
for the professor, please.
Okay, Senator Farrington.
Jack, maybe I should refer this to the professor also, but how are you defining subsistence hunting?
You already know the answer to that. We don't have an answer. But how I define it is it's anybody in this state that has been existing under subsistence conditions. The woman that has raised three kids back in the lower, the back 40, and have fed them on moose and salmon and so forth. The subsistence hunter to me is somebody that has used it as a way of life, a lifestyle. I think it includes many people in the state. I'm not just talking for villages, I'm talking for people on the outskirts of Fairbanks and the outskirts of Anchorage that have always counted on that meat for the winter supply.
I can tell you how Senator Tillian defines it. It's those that eat it get it before those that play with it. He phrased it the last meeting we had on the subject.
Well, I was wondering if they were using a monetary income.
I know where you're coming from now, Senator.
Listen to the tapes of this bill before.
What you're referring to and concerned about is when we define subsistence in 960, some of the address that if there were some people that were existing totally on subsistence and game got scarce, that we would boil it down to a need, a definite need. But as it is right now, subsistence has not changed at all. Having the section, I think, is going to help subsistence in many ways, but there has not been any change in designating specific users. We're still under the game plan that we've always been under in this state.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And who else did you want to testify?
Well, I think I already threw the ball to Tom. So
okay. State your name for the record, please, and continue.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Chairman, my name is Tom Lawner. I'm chief of the subsistence section of the Department of Fish and Game. I am here representing the subsistence section and the department's position on House Bill 199, and thank you for this opportunity to comment very briefly on the bill before you. The department believes that this section designation is most appropriate given our size, our role in conducting the investigation across divisional lines, and the fact that we are neither in a management nor permitting role. Whether you change the designation of the section or not, let me assure you that the operational benefits now accruing to the section by virtue of its being within the commissioner's office will continue. For example, the ability to cross divisional lines, having open access to the commissioner on policy matters and research autonomy. As section chief, I have no objection to the change in designation. Currently, our designation as a section has not hampered in any way our ability to manage our own development, to create our own program goals and operations and procedures, to develop relationships to concerned agencies and rural institutions, and to express our findings and perspectives within and outside the department. A change in designation at this point, without a change in our duties or size, would have primarily symbolic value. And Representative Fuller has pointed out, there are a number of subsistence advocates and institutions that have expressed a desire to see the subsistence use given equal status to commercial, recreational, and rehabilitation uses, and it is that purpose that is served primarily by this bill.
Okay, thank you. Any questions, Senator?
I know the party line when I hear it, and I don't expect you to vary from it, but indeed, wouldn't you expect if divisional status was created that in time you'd have a greater responsibility and a greater opportunity to represent that particular division and its attitudes? I'm not saying I support that, but I think that's the case.
Senator, it would really require a change in our duties for us to acquire more responsibility.
Statutory change in your duties.
Essentially, yes. We have, as you see in the legislation, we have no management responsibilities. We engage in no permitting. Our function is primarily research and coordination with a fairly extensive field staff. I could well imagine that field staff expanding in size as the informational needs require, but other than that, I would be very surprised if we acquired any additional duties to the ones that we have right now.
As a follow-up, Mr. Chairman, to that question, mm-hmm. Is your position you're opposed to divisional status at this day and time?
No, Mr. Chairman. The position generally is that, and that is true of the department as well, it is really equivocal. It has certain symbolic value which may accrue to the benefit of the department, but it has no functional or operational change would result from the change.
If you're not opposed to it, then is it your testimony you support it?
No, it's neither, Mr. Chairman. It's really primarily informational is our testimony. We have no real position. Since it doesn't change our functioning, and it only has symbolic value, it's a question of what is that symbolic value worth, either to the public or to the legislature.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions?
Well, there are these changes, and like you said, there's no real change at all other than we just change the division, but each one of the top guys gets a $5,000 a year raise.
For which we'd be eternally grateful, Mr. Chairman.
And,
but other than
know,
that...
Well, that changes, you know, $5,000 more a month. Same people, they just get a $5,000 raise. It's just something that's already being done, in my judgment. And a much better. It just sounds like whoever organized that puts you exactly in the right place that you're in now. And if I were going to do it myself,
what management authority I have, that's exactly what I would do, but I wouldn't take someone with the duties that you've listed and try to make a division out of them because it sounds good. Give everybody a $5,000 raise, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Mr. Chairman, if I might comment, it's probably our error that we haven't properly informed you as to what our duties and our responsibilities really are, but we have a fairly extensive research staff that is located in the bush, in major communities, Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau. In that way, we are similarly situated as the other, as the divisions are, and also habitat section within the department, so our organization is absolutely parallel. I don't think that is the reason to change the designation, but our organization is parallel.
Any other questions? Yes,
I might not totally understand, but I think I do. Is it true that we can't really define what subsistence is under this?
Well, Mr. Chairman, the way the board's intended to operate now in implementation of the subsistence law is not to move immediately to the definitional problem, which also plagued the legislature when it was dealing with the same issue. What it is tended to do is to adopt a set of procedures for the management of subsistence, and over a period of time, by setting various precedents, it would in fact back into what would be a more complete or detailed definition of subsistence than it currently appears in the law. After the first year of the operation of the section, the board's dealing with what we have given them and the information and the concepts that we provided to them for management resources, they feel most comfortable with that, and I think fairly comfortable with the law with which you provided them. So I don't think that there is any greater movement now to define subsistence than there was when that issue was before the legislature.
I can appreciate that, but it appears if we're setting up or elevating a situation to create a division to address something that we don't even define. For instance, to me, and I can only give you my own, I think subsistence relates to that which can be eaten by you and your immediate family. Once you sell it, you barter it, you trade it, then you're commercial. Call it what you want, you're commercial. I find it very hard to get too involved in this until, in fact, you can define what your mission is and what you're going to spend the money on.
Mr. Chairman, there is a definition not of subsistence, but of subsistence uses in the law that is fairly explicit, that provides very explicit guidelines for research. In conducting research based on those guidelines, we have assisted the boards in meeting what they consider to be the statutory intent. And in that sense, we have completed our mission in a couple of instances, and hopefully by this time next year, in a couple of more very significant arenas that will lay to rest some of the debates that have been carrying on for the last 10 years that have not yet been resolved. Hopefully we will be able to provide that kind of information to resolve those so that the boards and the department can engage their concerns in other areas that are perhaps more critical in terms of the economics of the resources that they're involved in.
Sir Craig,
what role did you play or do you play, for instance, in like decisions of the dip knitters and chipmunk or this kind of thing? What determination or what role do you play?
Mr. Chairman, we conducted a very extensive social research effort in the Copper River area this last year. We sent out questionnaires to all permittees that were very extensive. We compiled the data from that. We examined it. We put it on a computer because there was so much information that we did receive back from all portions of that user group. And we, together with the Commercial Fisheries Division, came up with a management plan that was modified and adopted by the Board of Fisheries to clearly establish that the dip netters in the area were in fact subsistence users, along with the fish wheelers from the area. And so, in fact, that entire fishery is now, by board designation, is a subsistence fishery. And as a consequence, the board of fisheries removed any other designation for dip netters based on what we consider to be factual evidence. We followed the data and came up with a solution, so that the management plan that flows from that includes the dip netters as well as fish wheelers in the subsistence fishery. There are distinctions that are dictated in the law that enable us to make distinctions in that group when the resource is in very bad shape, but otherwise it is a single fishery, a single subsistence fishery.
Any other questions?
Just one, if I might follow up on that. Is there any correlation between that amount of resource that you permit them to take under subsistence regarding, in other words, if you give them $5,000 or $10,000 worth of the state resource, is there anything which correlates that as part of their adjusted gross income, or do all other giveaway programs still eligible for?
Mr. Chairman, we did not build a management system based on income. With the exception of that point in time when the resource is really depleted, the law establishes two tiers of subsistence definition. The first one is customary and traditional use, period. Doesn't make any difference what income or employment situation, family dependency, or otherwise. When we get to the second tier, the resource is very limited. There are three other categories that come into play. That is dependency, which can be read as need, local residency, and the availability of alternative resources. Within the character, within the criterion of dependency, we have household size, employment opportunities, income, and so on, and income from other sources aside from income, and we've asked about that as well. We have not been able to quantify the value of the subsistence resource, but we have determined that people, and particularly within that fishery, that there are certain people who are absolutely reliant on, for a long period of time, on a much higher utilization of the resource than others. Putting those factors together is what gives us dependency rather than income by itself. It really becomes very torturous at a point, given the number of variables that we deal with to create equity in that fishery. I'm sorry that this can't be stated.
I don't want to prolong it or get too deeply involved in it, but the fact is, it's kind of a mini open entry type situation where we're delineating various citizens have preferential taking of state resources, and I think this is worth getting right into the bowels of.
Yep.
We're making decisions between our citizens. I think it's very significant.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and if I might just project a little bit that when this section and the department gets more heavily involved in the question of the Cook Inlet subsistence fishery, you will probably see more of the same, where in order to protect the fishery and also to protect the user groups, there may have to be distinctions among Alaskan residents. That has to be carefully done, and we're hoping that it doesn't result in a formal kind of limited entry system, which I think would be unfortunate, but some other method to keep opportunity alive for all Alaskan residents to participate.
Mr. Chairman. Okay, then Senator Ankworth, go ahead.
In other departments, it's probably handled differently, but is it my understanding that all regulations of the department, except for the emergency fishing orders and so on, are handled through the Department of Board? Board of Game, Board of Fish?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
So that if a sports fishing director doesn't sit down and write regulations that have not been thoroughly examined by the Board of Fish, is that right?
And adopted by the Board of Fisheries with a public hearing process.
And by providing you with the directorship for your department, it in no way increases your ability to draft, write, and make arbitrary regulations from perhaps a user's point of view.
No, Mr. Chairman, we're under the same duress as, and under the same benefits as anyone else, any other.
Presently, you have that status, and you will not get any more status in this area by virtue of becoming a directorship.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much.
I don't know. I think I've been reading into your testimony. It just seems like to me that you're telling us that you're doing quite well as you are, and you've been getting along fine, and you haven't testified anything that you couldn't do that you're presently doing without being without the raise and getting a new division status. Is the commissioner of, what's the administration's position? Did the commissioner of your department, does he approve this change, or are you just neutral?
Mr. Chairman, at the outset of the this bill, when this bill was presented last year, the commissioner was relatively adamant in his opposition to it because we had not yet begun. Now that we are in fact coordinated with the department and we have some small track record, I believe the commissioner is less adamant in his opposition. He, I think, believes that it is an unnecessary change. Continues in that view. I'm sorry that he wasn't able to come here himself.
No, that's fine, and I appreciate your candor. I really do.
Any other questions?
I have one, Mr. Forrest.
Okay.
Jack, do you envision tinkering with this further if you make it a directorship to give it more powers and relate directly, more directly to the subjective position of the subsistent user group? Do you intend to give it, is it your vision that you will give it ever increasing powers and responsibility within the whole framework? This is sure. One step in that direction, is that correct?
I don't, where I'm coming from, Senator, I don't believe that I'm looking for any more action out of the subsistence section that we're getting right now. I think that they're doing a good job. I don't think that we want to get them to have any more power than the game or the fishery. I was just making the pitch for equal status on it, that's all. There's no big game plan behind it.
Any other questions? If not, thank you very much. Representative Fuller, I'll notify you.
I think you get it.
If we take the bill up again, and I'll talk to you. And if there are other people who want to testify on it, they're not here today, so we're going to hold it for the time being, and I'll get back with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Thank you, Jack. Any committee preference in terms of which one we take next in order here?
And objection, I'd kind of like to take that plant quarantine resolution. I have an agreement to be with Lieutenant Governor. It's a piece of legislation I had introduced, and I think Mr. Palmer is here to testify on
another one. You're here to testify. Come forward, and if you will.
Senate Joint Resolution 60 that spent some years in.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bob Palmer, Special Projects Coordinator, Office of the Governor, and Chairman of the Special Agricultural Action Council. The bill, I think, resolution is very much worthwhile. As agriculture becomes more and more important to Alaska, then I think it behooves us more and more to take advantage of what nature has provided across the whole Arctic and subarctic rim of the world, and not just what is native to Alaska. There are indigenous plants that are growing elsewhere in this world that are adaptable to Alaska that we know nothing about, and the potential for developing from that base of that worldwide base, good commercial crops that can be very substantial in assisting Alaska agriculture. I think that potential is great. Well, I think the resolution speaks for itself, and I would very strongly urge its passage.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir.
An addendum is the following. The U.S. has quarantine stations, but they're at other latitudes. We end up bringing products from Scandinavia and the Soviet Union that more than likely would continue and grow and proliferate at this latitude. Fortunately, they go through the New Jersey station or other stations, and that drop to the south for the 3-year period of quarantine destroys them. There is no way that we can succeed in developing that northern product at those latitudes. We have to have it here.
Mr. Chairman, isn't it true that many seeds have been brought in from different places, Bob, like Finland and Sweden and so forth? They evidently do not need to be quarantined, is that right?
Some varieties have been, Senator, over the years. One of the varieties of barley that we used 30 years ago almost exclusively was a Swedish.
That's what I thought. I wonder what the difference between a seed.
Well, they may have been exceptional in that they were able to survive this period down south that Senator Kurtula speaks of. I think it's also true that there are relatively few plants that can do that. We've been fortunate that some have been able to, and then come on up here to be tested for utilization and have found a place in our scheme of things. But we don't know how many have been lost because, again, they had to go through the period down south and therefore never had an opportunity to prove their ability to fit into our scheme of agriculture here in Alaska. So, yes, some varieties are here now. Ingbo Timothy is a variety that I use on my farm on the Kenai Peninsula now exclusively, and it's from Sweden. But again, how many others could have been and have not. That's the real potential that we're missing.
These other countries in the northern part of the hemisphere, like Finland, Sweden, and so forth, they evidently have such quarantine centers, because I know that there's been a lot of debate, like Sitka spruce or something, that has been shipped to Finland and Sweden, where they've taken them. So they evidently have quarantine. What you're talking about at a quarantine center, that would be...
They either do or they're not concerned about plants going wild and getting out of control, and therefore don't feel the need for quarantine. But I think in all cases they do have, yes.
What is the fiscal note on a quarantine center?
It's a federal.
Federal sort of a thing?
Federal project. You can't, if I may interject.
Just
the state doesn't have the power to, yes, it's a resolution requesting. The state doesn't have the power. It's kind of like the Plant Materials Laboratory. There are 7 or 9 federal ones, and the federal government never would do it, so we finally built one ourselves. The quarantine station may end up that, but it'll take a lot of negotiation with the State Department first. On the seed situation, Senator, I think a lot of seed has been smuggled over the last 50 years, and some of it legally and some of it illegally, and we've gotten around it, but plant materials themselves cannot be handled that way, and it's unfortunate to have to do business that way, and it's stupid too. And as Bob said, a lot of good products have probably been lost because people legitimately are trying to bring them into the country. I know some of the stories. The first year your crop's fine. The second year, half of it's dead, and the third year, it's all gone. That's the story of the New Jersey plant quarantine station regarding northern products. Senator Kim.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to share an experience that I've had along this line with the committee. I worked, as most of you know, for 3 years in a congressional office. And we had an exchange program and farm visit with one of the countries that we've been discussing today. And there were 8 varieties of plants that we tried to bring into this country for use here. And out of those 8, not one survived the New Jersey experience to get in. We even had people who were trying to smuggle them in to try it, but we couldn't go that far. So we got them into a hand carried back to New Jersey, and still couldn't get up here. I'd be very much in support of this resolution.
Any other comments?
Now hear a motion?
I'm still moving. Yes.
Individual recommendation. Any objection to individual recommendations? How many do pass it? Okay, unanimous do pass. No objection, so ordered. Well, you get off with the big ones, I tell you that.
We get off with the resolution.
Yeah, I'm with the big ones, you're right, sir.
That's the resolutions.
I've
got House Bill 636.
Come in.
Would you take the stand, raise your right hand?
All right.
Go ahead.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, House Bill 636, having been a diver for a short period during my life, I find this a very interesting bill. However, I'd like to point out that the way this bill is written, it's going to put an onerous effect on many, many divers within our state. First of all, when you're hookah diving or scuba diving for gold or running a dredge, you're usually in a stream and in fast water, which it doesn't pertain to put a flag up. There's another place on down here in this particular bill where it says that a diver cannot go more than 100 foot radius from his diving flag. Well, anybody that's dove with twin 45s or single 74s know that oftentimes you're out 600 and 700 yards away from your point of dive. There are just too many onerous things in this bill which will affect the entire sport. The entire ability to do underwater exploration or to do underwater mineral recovery. I'd like to propose about 4 short amendments, and it's on line 10, 14, 17, and 22, and change shall to may. And if that amendment was favorably received, I would find the bill acceptable.
Let's see, what line is that again? Oh, on line 10 or 11?
Or 10, 10, 14, 17, and 22, which basically means that a diver may display a flag and what have you. And then when you get down here, where if boats, when they see the flag, they shall slow down and they shall observe the safety precautions.
Okay.
And on 22, that a diver's flag may be displayed only while diving operations are underway. It's on line 22.
I tell you, what my discussion, this essentially gets the bill. I mean, it's. That's the reason I thought just hold it in the committee, and if we can come up with something that's workable, but to put May in there, essentially, I mean, it doesn't change anything. So, I'll check with the sponsor.
The boat has to slow down.
When the diver puts a flag out, then the boat has to slow down. It means that somebody is in that area, and it's not somebody that's just gone underneath the water, but is exploring and maybe 600 or 700 yards away from where the flag is. Or anybody that's running a hookah rig or a venturi rig in shallow water isn't required to put a flag out.
Okay. What's the committee's pleasure then? I don't care.
Let's hold this and study it a little more. I'd like to look into some stuff.
Okay. Any other comments or questions? If not, we're adjourned.